Good evening, everybody. Sorry I missed so many weeks in a row. Welcome, everybody. Two shilas, okay? And you'll tell me which one you're interested in. Tonight, both shilas are, I guess, bordering on PG-13, but I think it's still, like, okay. Really somewhat of a young chevri here also, but nevertheless, it's all Torah Hashem, I think. So shaila number one, I was just in Eretz Yisrael this past week, so they always ask, do you want a window seat or an aisle seat when they make my ticket for me? So I said a window seat because I like to sleep on the plane. I have a whole cheshbin. I like dehydrate myself for like 24 hours in advance. I won't need to leave my seat too much anyway. So I was in a window seat, and a young lady sits down next to me. So that's not the shaila. I'm not into like asking people to move my seat and things of that nature. David Lichtenstein had an interesting podcast about that, and he said, I don't get it. I don't understand what the problem is. If you really want to move your seat, just say $10,000 for anyone who will switch seats with me, and then people will volunteer. It won't be a problem. So it's easy for him to say. But anyway, a woman sits down next to me, and she says, I could tell she had never been to Israel before. She doesn't look like she's not yet observant. Is that how we're supposed to say? Right. So she says to me, is it true? She said, I heard that in the middle of the flight, everyone gets up, goes into the aisles and prays. And so, like, I could tell she had never been on an LL flight before. So I said, yeah, it's kind of true. Then she, ooh, shalom aleichem. Then she took some medication, which I can only assume was a horse tranquilizer, because she was out cold, like from then till the very end of the flight, like mamish not budging. So I had gone on my zmanim in advance to cheshbon out exactly when I can daven, and there was like an hour window that you can actually daven on the plane. And because time is moving fast when you're going from here to Eretz Yisrael, so a lot of times people don't realize that when people make minyanim on the plane. So first of all, that's a different parasha, whether you should be making minyanim on the plane. Second of all, whether it's even tefillah b'tzibur anyway, because nobody hears anything anyhow, and whether it's worth, even if it is tefillah b'tzibur, is it worth the trade-off of the Chilul Hashem and blocking people from the bathroom? But leaving all of that aside, usually they're doing it at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, meaning they're doing it when they turn on the lights at the end of the flight, which is like, well after this month. So you have like this short window of time, and the short window of time came, and I realized, so I was going to dive in my seat anyway, but I realized that I left my talis and tefillin in my bag, which was in the overhead compartment, and the woman next to me was out cold, like horse tranquilizer, out cold, and the person next door also took the same thing. They were together, I don't know, they're out cold. So what do I do? So I said, what if I would have had to go to the bathroom, right? So I said, excuse me, mamish didn't hear anything. I know she wasn't deaf, because we had that brief conversation at the beginning of the flight, but mamish didn't hear a word that I was saying. And I looked at the flight tracker to see when we'd be landing in Israel, and we're landing in Israel a half hour before Shkia. So given all of that, what should I have done? Leaving out what I did do, what should I have done given all of that? That's shaila number one. Shaila number two, I got an email from a close friend of mine who is a rav and a therapist, and he said that he has a student who's also a therapist who called for consultation on an interesting shaila. I'll read it to you what he writes. She reports that her patient, 26-year-old, yeshivisha background, just recently married, and that's considered very late for more yeshivisha background. So she was single for a while, dating for like whatever 6 years before she got married, now married for about a year, has been suffering from anxiety about the following. So here's her problem. Her problem is that she has an anxiety issue, but to compound that problem is that her husband is a sleepwalker. Someone said, Rav Schechter said to me, I thought that's only children. I didn't know that adults can have this problem. So yeah, adults sometimes have this problem. He's a sleepwalker. He falls asleep and at times gets up in the middle of the night, walks around, and can also return to different locations, including her bed. So during the ideal time of the month, she's okay with it, and she can let him into her bed, and he goes back to sleep without a problem. Meaning he doesn't do anything. He doesn't touch her. He just goes to sleep. He's sleeping. So he just climbs into bed and goes to sleep. It's just sometimes it's like a guest room bed. Sometimes he's just walking around the house, and he just ends up. So sometimes he'll end up just like in her bed. So sometimes she's okay with it, and she can let him into her bed and goes back to sleep without a problem. However, when she's in Nida, she's scared to death. Now, she has an anxiety issue, so she's concerned, she's terrified every single night when she goes to sleep that he's going to end up in her bed. She can't fall asleep because she's terrified that he might end up in her bed. She's not worried about Bia, she's just worried about Nagia and being in the same bed. So and what she cannot do about it. So she can't sleep well during this time, and it's causing her tremendous distress. So the therapist, and in fact, she even is considering moving into a different room while she's in Nida and installing a special lock on the door so that he can't, it's an impenetrable fortress that he will not be able to sneak in. So the Shaila is, therapist wants to know what precautions, if any, the wife needs to take so that her husband will not go into her bed. Does she need to sleep in a different room, which is a nightmare scenario for someone who was single for a long time and is pretty much within Shana Rishona, you know, the beginning of marriage. It's like not a good idea, not a good thing. And what are her obligations to handle that situation? Okay, so like I said, both of them are a little bit PG-13, but these are the two shots, yeah?
I was going to say, the second child, is it more asking, I guess, about the halacha of, like, I guess the onus of the...
Oh, so we'll have to.
Like,
if we choose the second Shaila, we're going to have to identify what the issues are. So that might be the issue. So let's take a quick vote now. The Shaila about me on the airplane. Anyone by show of hands? The Shaila about the sleepwalking husband. And no one else cares. Okay, so that was a tie. So what do we do? What did you vote for?
First one.
Good idea. Okay. So let's go with that one. That's a good idea. So, what are the issues? Like, what are the topics that we need to discuss in order to come to some sort of mahalik, some sort of approach on this? So, what would you tell me? What sugis do I need to look at? Where do I open up a shulchan aruch? What do I have to know?
Broad topics.
Yeah.
It's a woman.
Right. Negiah shelo b'derech chiba. Right. Can you tap a woman?
Wait, okay.
Waking someone up from sleeping. Gezel Sheina, the famous Isser. Isn't it in the Ten Commandments? Gezel Sheina? No, it's one of the big ones. So the famous Isser of stealing sleep. And what else? Chil Hashem, okay. Tefillin while I'm davening. How important is it to be wearing tefillin while you're davening? I think there's also one more element. So you nailed like 4 out of 5. I think there's one more element, and that is that if I don't put on tefillin when I daven, what's going to be my other option? And if I don't put on tefillin when I daven shachris, so the plane's landing a half hour before shkia. So what am I going to be doing? I'll be putting on tefillin when I get to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe there's a maila in that. Meaning, if I'm either going to be putting on tefillin in Chutz Laretz, I'm going to be putting on tefillin in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe there's some sort of maila in putting on tefillin in Eretz Yisrael. Is there some sort of maila in doing mitzvahs, the same mitzvahs that you would do in Chutz Laretz? Not talking about Shumas Maizvahs, doing the same mitzvahs you would do in Chutz Laretz, but doing them in Eretz Yisrael. So these are the topics to discuss. So let's see how much of it we can get through. Yeah.
Also, is it better to wait and say Shumas for standing or do it sitting?
Right. So I I'm able to, within my seat, I'm able to like sort of stand at least for the for the kriyos, for the bowing, but usually for Shmon Esrei, it's not a comfortable stand, but I could do that without Mizrach. Yeah, I'm heading right there. No problem. Fantastic. I miss you. okay. All right. So let's get right into it. So first of all, touching women, right? So how bad is it to touch women? So there is a well-known machlokas, Rambam and Ramban, about Negia, b'derech taiva, about touching women b'derech taiva, b'derech chiba. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Issur Bia, Perachav Aleph, Halacha Aleph, Kol haba al erva min arayus derech evarim, o shechibek v'nishek derech taiva, v'nena b'kiruv basar, harez alokim min haTorah. That a person is chayv malkus min haTorah if he touches a woman b'derech taiva. Good, that's the Shitas HaRambam. It's pretty clear. The Ramban Ran disagrees with the Rambam, and he says, nah, whatever pasuk you're going to quote about Kisikravu, Lo Tikravu, that being Dvarim HaMaviin Lidei, that's just an asmachta. It's not a real drasha. The Ramban calls it, it's like, at most, like a chatzi shir, which is a funny expression to use to describe such an iser, but he says it's not really the iser min haTorah. Ramban has an interesting raya from a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara tells a maisa of Tana Dabei Eliyahu, of Eliyahu HaNavi, where there was a Talmud Echad, there was a certain Talmud Chacham, who had learned a lot of Torah, and he died at a very young age. And his wife was very broken by this, and by his patira, and she took his tefillin and went around to the different Bati Knesios and Bati Midrashos and challenged all the Talmidei Chachamim there, and she said, I don't understand, it's supposed to be Ki Chayech Varechim Echad, that the Torah is supposed to give you long life. Ba'ali Shoshana Harbe V'Kara Harbe V'Shimish Talmidei Chachamim Harbe, my husband didn't learn so much Torah, so where's his Arichos Yamim? So Eliyahu HaNavi finally says to her, you know, well, how did he act toward you while you were in Nida? And she said, you know, while I was bleeding, he didn't touch me at all. Then he said, okay, but how did he act toward you before you had gone to the mikveh, when you had no longer been bleeding, but you were still tamei? And she said, well, then he took certain liberties. She said, you know, achal imi, shasa imi, yashan imi, bekiruv basar. We had certain closeness, but it never went beyond that. And Eliyahu HaNavi says, Baruch HaMakom Shahargo Shalonasa Panam LaTorah, that Hashem should be blessed for killing him. He didn't pay attention to Torah. Torah says, V'elisha b'nindas t'masalo t'krav, and he violated this. So the Tosos is bothered by Akasha, what the Havamina was to distinguish between when she's actively bleeding, Yemei Nidusa, versus Yemei Libuna, when she's no longer actively bleeding. So Tosos quotes that maybe she went to the mikveh in between and she was no longer tamei on a darais level, but the Ramban says that it's anyway only going to be a violation on a drabbanon level. I mean, he didn't have bia with her, so he said the Ramban doesn't like Tosos' answer, doesn't like Rabbi Natan's answer that maybe she went to the mikveh after she finished bleeding and therefore she's only tamei on a drabbanon level. He says no, the whole thing is only an iser drabbanon to begin with. So this is the Ramban's Shita, and he says that's why Eliyahu said to her, Lo nasa panam laTorah. If he had violated a din d'oraisa, what phrase would you use about someone who violates a din d'oraisa? Sha'avar al divrei Torah. Sha'lo nasa panam laTorah sounds like, you know, he wasn't as connected, you know, as he should have been. Sounds like a din d'rabbanan. But all that is negiyah b'derechiba. I had no hava mina of doing the give. I needed to wake her up. She couldn't hear my excuse me's, right? She got, I was going to play with her screen and turn on the light right overhead, you know. But so that would have been, you know, I just thought of that now, actually. But that maybe would have been a good idea. But the option would have been, I mean, I could smother her with a pillow, I guess, but the option would have been like an elbow or something like that, right? Something that would be very decidedly negiyah shalo b'derechiba. So that's a discussion whether it's even aser midrabanan. The Gra in Yardeis, and Kuv Tzadihei writes that for ishto nida, it's aser midrabanan. But it seems that the Shach assumes, the simple reading of the Shach at least, that if it's not your wife, it's somebody else, then negiyah shalo b'derechiba, shalo b'derech taiv is mutter, heter gamur. So this is a huge machlokas in the poskim, in contemporary poskim. Like you go to a business meeting and a woman wants to shake your hand, right? You go for an interview. So the interviewer is a woman and she sticks out her hand. So how you react at that moment, whether there's hesitation, will likely decide whether you have a chance of getting that job. Right, you might say, excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't shake woman's hand, but it's nothing against you or anything. And she'll say, of course, no problem, and then you will not get the job. Or you can shake her hand, right? So that's the shadow. So the Stipler writes in his letters, Yaharig val yavar, chas v'sholom, absolutely, you have to die rather than doing that. And that was very clearly his shita. He held that a handshake is negiyah b'derechiba. Forget about that the Beis Shmuel argues on the Shach. Even if you hold like the Shach, he thinks that's called derech taiva, derech chiba, because it's an affectionate way to shake hands. That's in Karyina de Igrisa, Simon Kuf Samach Beis. The Rabbi Yamin Zilber in Chuvasaz Nidbru also is very machmir about this. But nevertheless, many, many poskim are makel. The Ezer Mikodesh writes, for example, he says, Nira Pashut, Dirak Chibas Bia, Hu Ha'isse. That only Chibas Bia is the Isse. So, Shalob Der Chiba, where it's not something that you would call like, you know, something that would lead to, you know, something that you would expect, the kind of touching that you would expect leading up to Bia, then it would not be necessary. Very rarely do you expect, like in the movies, they don't show someone shaking the hand in the, you know, as the beginning of the love scene, right? Not that you know from such things, but I'm just saying that that would not be what would lead to. And therefore, that would not be usher, and that is the shita of Morenu Harav Shechter Shlita, Morenu Harav Willig Shlita. Harav Willig does recommend to shake the hand in a very professional, courteous way, and not in a softer, you know, don't do like the French, you know, hold the hand with both hands and get, you know, a little kiss on the hand, you know, just a quick, firm, courteous handshake. And that's the, I remember when I was in the Sisim School of Business many years ago, we had a question and answer session with Rabbi Willig, and at that time Dr. Snow was teaching in Yeshiva, and they asked about shaking hands, and Rabbi Willig said he used to recommend the dead fish. You just stick out your hand and let the woman shake it. But he said that he was told that you will not get the job with the dead fish. He said, then he started recommending the bone crusher. Like, you know, going out. He said, it turns out you won't get the job with that either. So he said, what we call, he said, you know, we're a Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, brisk handshake, right? It should be brisk. That was Rav Willig's mahalik. It's Rav Shechter's mahalik as well. Rav Shechter mentioned this when he spoke in my shul. People were asking about business related issues, and he said that one time he was in a bank, and the teller stuck out her hand, and he shook her hand because she stuck out her hand, and he didn't want to embarrass her. And then she said, "Oh my, I forgot you're a rabbi." And he said, "I wasn't attracted to her at all. It wasn't at all derech chiva, derech taiva." So he said it in even more colorful language, but we'll leave that aside right now. Okay, so Kriya Shema with tefillin. How important is it to say Kriya Shema with tefillin? So there is a Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Yudalim Beis that someone who says Kriya Shema below tefillin is ki'ilu meyredu sheker al atzma. Whoa, that's bad. He's being made a dosheker. That's a real problem, right? And the Gemara then has another lashon kilu makriv ola below mincha v'zevach below nesachim. So probably less meaningful to most of us, but also bad. Meaning to bring a karban without the nesachim that are supposed to go along with the karban, not supposed to do that. So it's interesting. Rashi says made a dosheker alatzmo. Rashi says alatzmo lishna ma'aliya. So what does Rashi mean by that when he says lishna ma'aliya? Who's he being made a sheker on? It's Hashem. It's not about himself. And sometimes we have that atzmo is a lishna ma'aliya for Hashem. In the Chubur Nagadot in Gittin Daf Nun Vav, the Gemara tells us the horrifying story of Titus HaRasha going in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, stabbing the peroches, right? And what happened? And it started to bleed. And Savar Haragas atzmo. That's the lashon he uses. And Rashi over there says also that it's a lishna ma'aliya. He meant obviously that klape maila, that's what it was, that it was relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It could be, so one of the Mefarshim explains, maybe that's what the Ben HaRasha in the Haggadah says, Hosiyetz Atzmo Min HaKlal, and he was Kafar Be'ikr. Those are the same thing. He was Hosiyetz Atzmo Min HaKlal, he was Hosiyetz HaKadosh, it's a Lishna Ma'aliyah, and that's why he was Kafar Be'ikr. Okay, save that for Pesach, put that in your back pocket. Okay, but so what does it take to be Kilu Meirei D'Sheker, that it's like an active Aveira, to daven without tefillin on? So the Marshag, in a Tshuva Simen Nun Hei Os Gimel writes, no, you know what it's Meirei D'Sheker? That's b'misha einu miniach tefillin klal ba'usa yom. That's if you're not going to put on tefillin at all that entire day. And ein lo shum ones. And also, there's nothing preventing you from putting on tefillin. You're just choosing not to put on tefillin. That's when it's made a sheker. Because it's your mechuyiv in tefillin al pi Torah, and you're not being mekayim the mitzvah satorah. But if you're mekayim mitzvah tefillin that day, for example, you had put on tefillin earlier, or you're going to put on tefillin later, or you're simply unable to put on tefillin, so we don't say, oh, don't say Kriya Shema because it's an aveira. You know, What would you say? A person doesn't have access to tefillin. So should he say Kriya Shema or not? So you might say, well, Kriya Shema is a mitzvah, it's a positive mitzvah. But being made a dusheker is a losasei. So Shevi Altasei, don't do anything. No, of course you say Kriya Shema. Right, that's not Meirei de Sheker al Atzmo when he's not able to put on tefillin. And the Marshag even goes so far, again, as to say that even if he's going to put on tefillin, it's not a violation of Meirei de Sheker. Also, it's interesting to note that the other expression in the Gemara, that's like bringing a Zevach below Nesachim, when do you bring the Nesachim? When can you bring the Nesachim up until? So, days later, the Gemara says. You bring it days later. So maybe you can put on tefillin days later. So how could that possibly be? So pashtus is what it means, is that the nesachim, when you bring them days later, they'll still be connected to that zeva, to that karban. So the idea with tefillin is that when you put on tefillin, it should still somehow be connected to that kriyashma. That even if it's not while you're saying kriyashma, maybe it's good enough that it's still connected to the Kriya Shema. How would it be connected to the Kriya Shema? Maybe it has to be within the Zman of Kriya Shema. So again, Mahalik number one is Marshag. Marshag says it could even be later that day. That's fine. You can put it on Mincha time. It's okay. It's still not made a Deshekar. Second possibility, based on the comparison to Nesachim, that no, it's just got to be done within the Zman Kriya Shema, which is a huge nafkamina for me in this case, because I wasn't going to be able to put on tefillin within the Zman Kriya Shema. I was going to be able to put on tefillin that day, right, if I get to Eretz Yisrael on time. Then there's a tshuva of Rav Shlomo Kluger in Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo in Simon Shin Nun Dalid, where he says, no, you got to put on tefillin during the Shema. He says, you know, the Nesachim could be brought later because whenever you're bringing Nesachim, it's obvious that they're connected to a Zevach. You would never bring them without a Zevach. But tefillin, you have to wear all day long. Tefillin me'ikra din is a mitzvah all day long. So what's showing the connection between that tefillin, the tefillin and kriyashma, unless you're wearing it mamish at the same time? Putting on tefillin even 5 minutes later is something you would have had to do anyway, even without the kriyashma, because you got to wear tefillin all day. So the only way, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, to connect the tefillin to the kriyashma is like the pashtus of the Gemara, that you have to be wearing it simultaneously. So that's how Rav Shlomo Kluger says. And even if you say, like the Marshag, that you could put it on later in the day and it's not a problem, so the Tshuvas Marsham in Chel Gimel Simen Shun and Tes says everyone would agree, quoting Magen Avraham Nel Yeraba, that it's mitzvah min amuvchar to say Kriya Shema and daven with your tefillin on. That's for sure. It's the best way to do the mitzvah. That there's no doubt. Okay, so that's as far as Kriya Shema with tefillin. So is it better to put on tefillin while you're saying Shema? Absolutely, it's better. Is it Meirei de Sheker if the reason you're not doing it is because of other considerations, like not wanting to wake somebody up, or you're going to put it on later? There's plenty of room to say that takes away the status, at least, of Meirei de Sheker.
What about Mar Zion?
What do you mean? No one's going to see anything. I'm on a plane. You know, like I'm just sitting in my seat saying whatever I'm saying. You know? Now, mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael is a fascinating topic. You would think, oh, come on, that sounds silly. You know, that there's some serious marmakomos on this topic. The Sifri in Parshas Ekev writes, Aval pi shani magle eschem min ha'aretz l'chutz la'aretz havam mitzionim b'mitzvos. Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Klal Yisrael that even though, this is commenting on the second parasha of Kriya Shema, actually, that even though I'm going to send you into Chutz La'aretz, you have to be Mitzuyan B'mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz. Why? Because when you come back to Eretz Yisrael, I want you to know what you're doing. I don't want you to be like totally lost as far as how to do mitzvos. Mashal melech shekas alishto. And then the Sifri gives a mashal. Imagine a king gets angry at his wife, v'tarfa beis avia, and he throws her to her father's house. Sa'amrla, he says to her, you should stay beautiful. You know, don't let yourself go. Why? Because when you come back, you got to be ready to return at any time. I don't know what kind of relationship, for the guys who are not married yet, do not expect that you have the right to dictate any sort of terms of anything. You know, but I guess at some point in history, this mashal made sense to people, that a king would send his wife away and say, stay beautiful, because you never know when I might allow you back. So, and she would say, oh, okay. So, So yeah, but that's the mashal. You know, I was listening to Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. He said that the Devorah is Eishes Lapidos. That Lapidos, people have the last name Lapidos. It means Lapidos actually means someone who's dominated by their wife. So Rabbi Reisman said that he asked someone, "Why do you like still have the name Lapidus?" And he says, "I don't know. My wife told me that's the name we're supposed to have." So he said, "It's surprising that there aren't more people walking around with that last name." But okay. But so anyway, so that's the mashal it gives. But so how literally do we take that medrash? You know, so some of the Rishonim and Achronim understand that medrash. Some of mitzvahs atulias ba'aretz. And it's saying that you should fulfill the midrabanon in chutz laaretz so that you're not lost when it comes to trumas and maizos and shemitah and everything else when you come back into Eretz Yisrael. I don't know, is that the pashtos? That's how the Netziv explains. The Ramban in Vayikra Perek Yudches Pasuk Chaf Hei quotes this medrash and he says, Ki ikar kol hamitzvos liyoshvim be'eretz Hashem. All mitzvos, the ikar is if you're living in Eretz Yisrael. The Rashba and the Tshuva Kufla Medalid, the Iker Mitzvos HaTorah Kulan Ba'aretz Hein. Rabbeinu Bechai, Dvarim Parak Yud Aleph, also says it even more explicitly. There is a Rashi, where Rashi writes, Af La'achar Shenizgalu Min Ha'aretz, he's quoting the Sefri, but he says it a little bit differently. He says, even after you're sent into exile, Hayu Mitzuyonim B'Mitzvos, you should keep the Mitzvos, and then he says a little different than the Sefri, Hanichu Tfilin Va'asu Mezuzos. Still put on tefillin and still do mezuzahs. Why? Kidei, so that when you come back, you'll be ready. Ooh, so Rashi's pretty clear. It's not about mitzvot tlius ba'aretz. He says tefillin, mezuzahs. That, why do we do in chutzar so we can be ready when we come back? Now, to be clear, the Ramban and Rashi and the Rashba, they all hold that we're absolutely mechuyev to do mitzvot in chutzar. Question is, are those mitzvot the same value as when they're done in Eretz Yisrael? And it seems that the majority of the Rishonim say no. That they're not the same value. There is a passage in Aksava Kabbalah where he teaches up Rashi. He says, no, the Rashi's a typo. What does it mean it's a typo? Rashi says, Rashi must have written Hayim Tzionim b'mitzvos and Tuf Vav Men. And he meant Trumos and Maestros. But when they spelled it out, they wrote Tfilin u'mezuzos. Okay, maybe, but it doesn't. We don't have like any earlier manuscripts of Rashi that indicate that that's correct, right? Meaning, it seems that the Rashi as we have it is correct. So it's cute. It's like a Torah Tamima type of thing to like make up typos in order to explain things. But like you know, we don't have anything that indicates that that's actually a typo. So Lemaisa, Rav Nevensal, I'm told, recommends that if a person is flying into Eretz Yisrael, even if he did put on tefillin on the plane, if he gets there before Shkia, put on tefillin again. Because mitzvah of hanachas tefillin in Eretz Yisrael is not the same mitzvah of hanachas tefillin in Chutz Laaretz. So Rav Nevensal recommends that l'chadchila for everybody to do. In the back of my mind, I had this, you know, this going on in my mind also, that, you know, when I get there, it's Yisrael, if I put on tefillin for Mincha, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it's even better than putting on tefillin for Shacharis, because Shacharis, I'm going to be in Chutz Laaretz. Now, of course, I still could have done both, right? You know, so it's just my rationalizing in my mind. What about stealing sleep, waking somebody up? So, to make a long story short, the term Gezel Shena was invented, we believe, in the Catskills in 1976 or so by a tired camp counselor. Meaning the first time we find the term Gezel Shena used, if you search it on Bar Ilan, is in a tshuva from Rabbi Menashe Klein. You know, so it's not really a... So what is it? It's Nezek. It's Haftal Recha Kumocha. It's not nice. Not nice to wake somebody up. Now, at the same time, if you're on a plane, you know, it sort of comes with the territory that sometimes the person sitting next to you is going to have to go to the bathroom. I don't care what kind of force tranquilizer you took at the beginning of the flight. The person might need to go to the bathroom, and that means that you're going to have to be woken up. So really, probably the right thing to do, in retrospect, would have been to call the flight attendant and say, I just can't get out of here, right? Can you do me a favor? And then she would have shaken them awake. And they would have had to actually like get up, get out of their seat. Like they probably would not have easily fallen back asleep after that. But you know, what can you do? The problem is, it wasn't even yet the time where people were waking up on the plane. Meaning, the real zman to daven is so early in the flight that like it wasn't. it really felt wrong to do that. So someone said, why don't you just climb over the seat? You know, if you're like acrobatic, you can. So I'll tell you what was going through my mind. I thought about it. What was going through my mind was, and what if someone takes a picture? You know, like you always have to like picture like yourself. You know, like just a couple of days later, I was in Shalavim and I brought some pizza for my son's friends for lunch. And then afterwards, I was talking to my son's Rebbe, whose name is Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, the real Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. So he's holding a pile of svarim like this, and I'm holding a pizza box, and we're talking. And the next thing I know, it's all over Twitter, and everyone's sending me pictures of me talking to the Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz with memes of two Spider-Mans pointing at each other or whatever. So it's all over the place, and like I look like an idiot holding a pizza box. But not as bad as climbing over some woman, on an airplane. What if there's turbulence? Oh my gosh! You know, like this could have gotten really, really bad. So that's what was going through my mind, to just stay in my seat. So I probably did the wrong thing. Probably the right thing would be to call the flight attendant, ask her to wake them up, and go out of the seat. And, you know, sometimes it happens. If you have to go to the bathroom, they're going to blame you. What can you do? That's probably what I should have done. I was thinking about asking someone to get it for me, but then I realized it's in my bag, which is in the overhead. They would have had to find the bag, take the bag, open the bag. It wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have that wouldn't have worked. But Lamaisa, what I did is I just davened in my seat and then I put on tefillin when I got there in Israel. I ran off the plane as fast as I could. I found the first place even before you go down, like those things where you see the people coming in and go. So there's like a, before the bathrooms, there's like a place where there are like a couple of chairs right after you get off the plane. I just quickly put on tefillin and I davened mincha like that. Probably the wrong thing to do, but anyway, that was my cheshbon at least. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.